Have you received your KBOO Silent Drive letter in the mail? Here's your chance to support your favorite community radio station and enter a chance to win some fabulous prizes. No letter? No worries. Go to KBOO.fm to find out more about what you could win when you donate to KBOO between now and September 14th. Here's a teaser. The grand prize is a 3-day, 2-night stay at El Dorado Resort and Casino with airfare in the biggest little city in the world. Yes, that's Reno, Nevada. The first prize is a night out on Burnside with a night at the Jupiter Hotel, with dinner at Le Pigeon, drinks at Cider Riot, and breakfast at Grendel, so you can dive deep into the Burnside nightlife. And our second prize will allow you to stock up on medicinal and recreational treats at Jane PDX. Go to kboo.fm to donate. When we come together, we build our community's resilience, and there's no better time to invest in KBOO than now.
Here we are, Jim.
Yes. Good morning, Glenn.
The second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the dirt bag. We were gone last month, but we had a pinch hitter.
Yeah, I actually listened. It was good.
Good. I was down flipping Swedish pancakes, and it was a good year.
I wish you'd flip those up here somewhere.
I had them this morning, Jim.
Oh, man. All right. Well, maybe next dirt bag, I'll come over to your house before
right.
I come here.
Well, I thought about it. Didn't think about it far enough in advance. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. We've got a busy show as usual. First up, we will get right into the Home Orchard Society's All About Fruit show. We'll just give you a sneak peek and give you some ideas of what that is, which we do every year about this time. It is next month, but we'll get you primed, and so you can reserve that weekend. We've also got our plant of the month is squash, winter squash, and summer squash. We'll talk about those, cross-pollination, and some of the myths that are related to that. We also will be talking about cover crops. This is a perfect time for that in anticipation of the rains coming. If you could do it this week, that would be great. We'll also talk about harvesting and storing of veggies and fruits and planting. What can be planted now and what should be planted now. But first, All About Fruit Show. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, great event. It's you really must go to that event if you like fruit, if you like to eat fruit and be around fruit and talk to people about fruit, and if you're a fruit nut, is what I've
This is decided. October 21st and 2nd?
21st, 22nd. In
Saturday, Sunday.
Beautiful Canby, Oregon, the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. It is a little drive, but it's free parking, so
yeah.
It's kind of nice. And the show itself is really remarkable. I mean, there's nothing like it in the Northwest that I know of, where you get so many different varieties presented and so many cool people to talk to about them and try taste them and photograph them if you want. And there's speakers, including myself, will be there giving a talk.
Hey, I think I am too now that I think about it.
Well, good. I'm glad you remembered.
Yes, I talked to Jerry, contacted me. It's going to be a beekeeping in the orchard or something like that.
Cool. Yeah, I'll be talking about growing unusual fruit. That's my
how unusual. Interest.
I know how odd would that be. So it's a really great deal. And there's some commercial booths there. I know One Green World will have a booth, and there's some other folks that will be there.
Yeah, they sell, tools. That's what they're called. Yep. Or sharpening. I think the Home Orchard Society will have fruit for sale.
Books. Lots of books.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But the main thing is, of course, fruit tasting.
Yep. Yep. And seeing it. You know, like you get a chance. If you're going to think about putting some interesting fruits in your yard or orchard or on your balcony, you know, here's a chance to check them out.
We think it might be the largest fruit tasting in North America, 600 to 800 varieties.
Well, why don't we just make it the world, and then we can...
Don't know about that.
I know. Anybody, I'd love to hear from a listener out there that knows of something like this outside of the U.S.
Have you gone to, is there anything comparable to this in your travels?
No. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I've seen a lot, been to a lot of places where you have, you know, fruit tasting, but not on the scale.
Okay. Well, that is next month. We'll have another opportunity to mention it before.
Yeah,
October, before it actually happens.
October 21st and 22nd, and it starts at 10 a.m. and ends at 4 each day.
Okay. If you do have a question about that or anything going on in the garden, give us a call, please, 503-231-8187. We'll be happy to try to tackle that. Okay, our plant of the month, like I said, are squashes, and... Generally, they're divided into two categories, summer squash and winter squash. But what's probably as interesting or more interesting even is the three types of squash that we grow, the three species of squash that we grow. The cucurbitas are the main family name, cucurbita, C-U-C-U-R-B-I-T-A. And then the species name, we have Machata, Cucurbita maxima, and Cucurbita pepo, Cucurbita pepo. And we hear a lot that, and you see a lot when you get volunteers in the garden, of weird shaped squashes, that zucchinis that look like baseball bats are that big, or well, they can get that big on their own anyway, but there can be cross-pollination going on. However, it has to be only within those families that I mentioned there, the Pepo, Maxima, and Moschata. So if they're not within those, then you're fine. Now, there are other members of the cucurbita, like cucumbers, but they are not going to cross-pollinate with any of those other squash. Mm-hmm. So if you are only growing pepo, and those varieties are field pumpkins, summer squash, zucchinis, the straight-neck zucchini, spaghetti squash, and acorn squash, if you're growing any of those are all in that same pepo family, then you will have cross-pollination. But if you're only growing zucchini from that family, then you can save the seed. No problemo. Now, unless your neighbor is also growing zucchini or some other type of pepo. See where it gets kind of interesting?
Sure.
Here? So the maxima include the winter squash. What we would consider winter squash, for example, buttercup or Hubbard, pink banana, Boston banana squash, all of those are the maxima. And then the mochada are the butternut. It's too bad that they have these similar names, butternut and buttercup.
Mm-hmm.
But butternut is the main one from that mochada family.
Mm-hmm. We grow a lot of butternut, and it's amazing how long you can store those.
Yes, and you really get a pretty good bang for your buck on that, and there's a lot of meat.
It's about the easiest source of food I can imagine.
You know? Right, and they will last for a long time. Yeah. Members of the pepo do not store for a very good time. That includes acorns, pumpkin, straight-neck zucchini, patty pan zucchini, spaghetti squash, ornamental gourds. And well, the ornamental gourds can store for quite a while. But the acorns certainly do not.
Right.
And I'll get into that a little bit later when we're talking about storage of fruits and vegetables for the longest term. But it helps a lot if you do cure them correctly. And then you can get, well, in the case of acorn, 2 to 3 months worth, certainly. But of the others, of the butternut and the butter cups and the Hubbards, those can last for up to 6 months, even.
How about a year? Butternut, we have butternut. We eat butternut squash in late spring, the year after we harvest it. It's amazing.
Well, that's pretty good.
I know.
I mean, that's very good.
And we don't do anything special. We just put it in a place where it's not going to get frozen.
Well, that's the key. You know, I mean, that is a key.
Yeah.
But it's not going to get too warm either.
It's dry and cool.
Right.
And amazing. I mean, it's like incredible that we're still eating that in June.
Where is that? Where do you store it?
We in a building at the nursery.
Oh, a building. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's an unheated part of it.
But heated is enough heat to keep it from freezing in there during
the
winter.
Okay. Yeah. Right. All right. So these are, then once again, on the pepo, that's the zucchini. And they're technically a fruit, even though we consider them a vegetable, but they're a fruit because they have this soft covering around the seed.
Mm.
If that's the loosest definition that we can have of a fruit versus a vegetable. The others are winter squash, which have a hard rind and are, of course, the skin is not designed to be eaten where it can with the zucchini, mm-hmm. and whatnot.
We're eating right now. My partner Lorraine is making these wonderful dinners with crookneck squash, the young ones, very young. Uh-huh. And it's just like, it's a beautiful summer meal, you know, with steamed crookneck squash and beans. And
you brought up an interesting point in that we are eating these, in the case of zucchini, we're eating those as immature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they get larger, then you can't eat the skins.
Right.
And, you know, all they're good for is either baseball. Or
give to your neighbors,
or a, you know, in bread or muffins or whatever else you want to use,
right.
For the filler.
Right.
Okay. Derek tells me we have a phone call, so let us take Victoria. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hello. Yes. Okay. So I bought a bunch of asparagus roots last year, planted them this year. Well, they guaranteed they weren't the female kind, but they are. So I want to dig them up and get rid of them, but I also thought, well, maybe I could just share them with somebody. So how and when and how do I do that?
Well, when they're dormant is the best time to do that, which would be coming up here. I mean, they're getting there now too, but is the reason that you don't want the females just because they're not as big?
No, you've got all the seeds that you have to deal with.
Well, I suppose that is something to consider.
But if you harvest the plant of shoots, you don't have seeds.
Well, it's my understanding that every year, successive year, you get to harvest more, but you're not supposed to harvest them all when they first come up.
Well, if they're too small, then don't harvest them.
Okay.
You know, pencil size is good.
Okay. But so it doesn't matter. So if they're pencil sizes, you harvest them. Like I've harvested all year, actually, since spring.
That's pretty nice in that respect. Asparagus is. Well, you can cut them off before they form the seeds or before the seeds mature.
Yes, I understand that. But I'm going with the information that I got that you have to leave a few to replenish the root system.
Certainly, but even leaving them until they start doing the forming seeds, That's enough.
You mean you can just cut that part off, the top part? I was told that you have to cut it off below the soil level.
Well, you could cut that part off too, but I think that most of the energy gathering has already been accomplished by them. The whole stalk is going to die.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes.
I mean, they're dying now.
Right. No, I've actually cut quite a bit of the above ground foliage.
Yeah, they can get in the way.
All right, again, so let's say I want to harvest some of the roots and save them over winter. Can you do that?
Oh, sure. But you could also probably leave them in the ground because they're very hardy.
Okay.
Well,
I was thinking of selling them at the Saturday market.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
What is your concern about the seeds?
Well, it's a bother because they'll start. What happened was I accidentally composted some of my asparagus seeds like 2 years ago, and then I spread the compost on a bean row that I was planting, and I got all these asparagus plants growing now. So
well, there's your your stock to sell there.
Yes, that was the thing. That was my thought. They're very small. The biggest one is like half a pencil size.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, I'll just package these up because I did buy them packaged up from this woman at a plant sale.
Oh, wait a minute here. The woman who guaranteed that they were male, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I don't even know how to figure that one out.
I don't know how she did either, unless you're just digging them up.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't see her again the following year. I was going to sort of give her a talking to, but...
Well, when you sell them, don't make any claims.
Right. No, I won't. I won't. Definitely won't. So would I store them in moist wood chips, or how would I?
Yeah, that would probably work if you dug them up ahead of time, but I'd probably just leave them in the ground and then dig them up as you need them.
Okay. Well, because this plant sale is, if I do the plant sale, is not until April next year.
Yeah.
So I belong to a garden club, and we have a plant sale every year.
I see. Well, you'd want to, you know, dig them up before they start sending out shoots, so.
Right.
January.
Right. Okay, so wood chips are a good thing.
Sawdust, something like that. Just not too moist. You don't want it, like, wet. You want it just lightly moist.
Okay, lightly moist.
I've seen some roots as they're sold, you know, pretty looking dry.
Yeah.
Like dry looking.
Yeah.
Right. No, well, I soaked mine in Super Thrive in a bucket for a couple days before I planted it.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah. And they produce the first year, and anyways, I just...
Yeah, that's the benefit of having a root as opposed to a seed.
And, you know, I've got it above ground, and I've done everything, all this research, and we have, an 8 foot per person per year is what I was told. So I have a little bit more than 16 feet of asparagus.
Huh. And you've been watering this whole time to keep the production going? Yeah, that's the key.
I have a soaker hose system that just works like a sweet dream.
Excellent. All right, Victoria, well,
thank you.
Good luck with those males and females.
Yeah, good luck selling them.
I didn't know that I could cut them, you know, the tops.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
I'll do that next time.
Right. Or just cut them and let them compost there in your asparagus bed, so anything that sprouts will be in your asparagus bed.
That's a great idea. Thank you very much.
All right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. After that, let's go to our first music here. And all of these have to do with cool, because it's been so darn hot, and I'm ready.
You know,
ready for cool.
It was 45 at my place this morning.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was so cold, I actually closed the windows.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be complaining about it.
Yeah, soon enough.
In fact, the last time Derek was was my host here was in January when the streets were closed down, and I took the bus in. Streets weren't closed down. They were just snowed in.
I drove into Portland during that time.
You didn't come into the show.
That was maybe the time. I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, we may have called.
I think we called in on that one, yeah.
Yeah.
But I did come in at one point, and I couldn't believe how bad the streets were. I saw it right in your neighborhood, too.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so anyway, the first one up we have is Joni Mitchell, Be Cool.
Everybody's gonna name it. Be cool. If you're worried or uncertain, if your feelings are hurting, you're a fool if you can't keep cool. Charm, don't alarm them, keep things light. Keep your worries out of sight. Play it cool, play it cool. 50-50 fire and ice.
floor, 'cause you just seen your lover coming through the door with a new fool. Be cool. Don't you sweat it. Start right in right now trying to forget it. Be cool. Don't get riled. Smile. Keep it light. Be your own best friend tonight. Play it cool. Play it cool. 50-50 fire and ice. Jealous, don't get overzealous. Keep you cool. Don't whine. Kiss off that flaky Valentine. You're nobody's fool.
Be cool. Joni Mitchell. The album Wild Things Run Fast. Well, the cool weather does bring the opportunity to plant cover crops. Talk about that now. And thinking about which cover crops and when to plant. I know out at the farm you plant other things, different things probably than most home gardeners would plant.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, there's some interesting ideas. With the last couple of years, we started using common vetch as a cover crop.
Yeah. And that's a legume meaning that it, well, probably means something different, but it will fix nitrogen.
Right.
So what happens is that with the help of certain bacteria that are in the soil or ones that you can add, and I think our Dirtbag Dictionary term from July was inoculant, and I don't know that we talked about that.
Hmm.
So I'll just squeeze that in here right now. The inoculant is these rhizobacteria, these root bacteria that will colonize around the root and will help it fix nitrogen. The inoculant doesn't have anything to do with germination or better yield, although the plant may be healthier because of it, but certainly not germination. But the time that you add inoculant is when you plant the seed. And oftentimes what it does, the seed is moistened maybe, and you swish it around in this powdered inoculant that you can buy at most garden stores for peas or beans or something like that. And if you've grown peas or beans before in the general area, then you probably don't need an inoculant. You already have that bacteria, that rhizobacteria there that will help the bacteria that are around it colonize and collect nitrogen.
My neighbor who turned me on to common vetch is a commercial vegetable farmer, and he's using it on his organic fields in place of any fertilizer. And he actually, except for corn, tells me that he gets enough nitrogen from using common vetch as a cover crop that he doesn't have to add any.
I gave a presentation last week to a garden club in Tigard, and we were talking about blueberries was the main thing, and one discussion we had was how much fertilizer do you put on it? And Oregon State Extension has come up with this, with formulas as to how much actual nitrogen each blueberry bush needs. And I'm just going to round off numbers here, but it's going to be something like 0.2 pounds, or no, excuse me, 0.2 ounces of actual nitrogen per plant.
Not very much.
Well, and then you think about, well, how much nitrogen is actually in a bag of fertilizer? So let's say you have a bag that has the numbers 555 on it, 20 pounds. So how much actual nitrogen is in that bag? What do those numbers mean? We should have a discussion about this.
A garden stumper, wouldn't that be good?
Yeah.
How many pounds of nitrogen is in a bag, a 20-pound bag that has 555?
Well, what that means is that 5% of that weight is nitrogen. So in a 20-pound bag, and you have 5%, what is that, Jim?
1 pound.
1 pound of nitrogen, which isn't a lot.
But it's a lot more than 0.2 tenths of an ounce.
That's right. Right. So how many applications of that bag for that plant at 0.2. Actually, that's one application, but you do that three times, you know, once a month.
That's, you know, the first application. If you did it one bag, spread it out that way, you'd do 90 plants with that one bag. I just did the math in my head. I think it's right, or maybe 80. But it's,
well, yeah,
it's a lot of plants. That's really interesting because, you know, a kiwi, when I used to give talks about growing kiwis, a mature kiwi vine, the idea was you give it 1 pound of nitrogen for that one plant.
Per year. Yeah. Well, it's a bigger plant than a blueberry.
Yeah, but not that much bigger.
Right.
I mean, if you think of 90, 80 blueberry plants.
Well, the vine, though, can be huge on a...
Yeah, but it wouldn't. But 80 blueberry plants? Anyway, that's...
Well, that was just your back of the envelope.
Okay.
It eventually gets to something like 0.75 ounces.
I get it. Okay. You keep applying it.
Well, three applications.
Yeah.
We digress. But the point is that this gives you the idea that some of these leguminous cover crops can add substantial amounts of nitrogen to a field. For example, fava beans. I'm just can't remember which ones produce how much nitrogen, but it might be 150 pounds of pure nitrogen or actual nitrogen per acre.
It's great.
It's cheap.
It's cheap, and think of all that organic matter then you add too. So
right.
You just do a wonderful thing.
It's no wonder your organic vegetable gardener neighbor does it.
Yeah.
That's why we should do it too as home gardeners.
Yeah.
But first, let's go back to the phones. We don't want to keep Kim waiting too much longer. Morning, Kim.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well.
I know this might not be your expertise, chickens, but I have a 500 square foot area that I have two chickens that roam around that normally turns to weeds, but now it's just amazingly just dirt.
Yeah.
They do such a good job. And when you mentioned cover crops, I thought, well, I wonder what would be a good cover crop, you know, maybe to have it grow in the spring and they can kind of eat up and... For chickens, I mean, I know they can eat anything, but
well, you would wall or screen fence it off to get the cover crop going.
Yeah,
because there's no way you would get any seed started.
That's true.
in the chicken thing there. Well, I don't think you would need necessarily a legume there because you're not going to plant anything. Grow there.
But like, for example, you know, alfalfa, some plants that have good nutritious leaves, you know, that you use mm-hmm. for making hay. I mean, I would think alfalfa, vetch, some other those kinds of plants.
Or something that would give you much ground cover, you know, green. You know, I'm thinking even of, you know, annual rye.
Oh, yeah.
Which is easy. Jim, although, has given me the evil eye on that one. I don't know.
Well, it's a grass, and you don't know how...
Yeah, but chickens like grass.
Yeah, but I bet they'd prefer, if they're making eggs or doing something where they need more protein, they're probably going to get more protein out of a legume leaf than they will of grass leaf.
That could be true. I don't know where the protein comes in.
Right.
Yeah. That would be an interesting piece of research. That's something we probably, either Glenn or I, obviously.
Kim, you're right. We don't have expertise on the chickens.
Well, no problem. I just thought I'd call in and ask.
Well, I think that's a wonderful idea, though.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, give them something to explore. Boy, can you imagine the excitement the first hour they get let out into that.
Yeah, and I've been amazed at the ability for them to weed. I have only two chickens, and I have an area of, like I said, 500, 600 square feet, no weeds this year. I mean, I live in Portland. It turns to weeds, right? I mean,
yeah, well, no, it'd be nice if you could, you know, garden half of that 1 year, and then and then the next year turn them loose there and garden the other half. And
I could probably suggest something you could plant that they wouldn't eat, and you could, if you wanted a really nasty weed, just to, I mean.
There's a few out there.
What would that be, Jim?
Well, I'm wondering if Canadian thistle might be.
Yeah. They don't like the alliums.
Oh, you mean the plant itself or the actual seed or garlic head or whatever?
The actual seed, like those bluebells, I think they're in the allium.
Oh, yeah.
They don't like those, and then there's another weed, I don't know the name of it, it's kind of terrestrial looking, and it's, they don't eat that. But for the most part, most stuff is
yeah.
gone.
And when they're younger, they might, when the weed is younger, they might go for any everything.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Yeah.
All right, well, it's good, something to think about.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep,
yeah.
Thanks, Kim.
Bye.
Okay, so cover crops that I prefer in my garden are, the main two are crimson clover and fava beans. They're both easy to plant, although one, we plant them differently. The crimson clover, I just hand broadcast, will prepare the bed and broadcast it by hand. That is, take, you just take your hand and throw it out there in, you know, somewhat of a fan motion. And then I'll scratch the with a rake, or even my hand if it's a very small area, a little bit of soil over the top. And with the rains on our way, on the way, this should be a perfect time. If we weren't going to have rains, I would, you would have to water it in, because it could, but once it gets wet once, then you have to keep watering. Because if the seeds start to germinate and then we have 90-degree days, although I don't think any of those are forecast now, or even 80 with a hot sun, it'll cook it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important. But we of course, we have to, we do that on a larger scale.
Sure.
It's the same idea. And we have, right now, we're getting ready to plant our cover crops on several acres, but we've also been watering some soil just to get it so we can make raised beds, which we're trying to do before the heavy rains come. So that.
And the other cover crop, just to finish my line of thought here, is the fava beans, and those are bigger seeds. They're up to the size of a slender penny, and maybe about the same color.
Mm-hmm.
And for those, I do draw a line with a hoe, maybe down half an inch or so. Drop those in, and with the rake, just move the soil over on top of them. Pretty hardy, both of them pretty hardy, and will grow. They grow now, they'll germinate and grow, pull 4 or 6 inches in some cases, and then they'll stop growing, be dormant, and then come February, probably they'll start growing again. Now with the fava beans, cold weather can nip them off. But they'll come back from the seed, even if they've, the top 2 or 3 inches have grown, have died.
Do you know how cold hardy they are? What's the lowest temperature you've seen them withstand?
Well, I had them withstand this year.
Mm-hmm.
So under, of course, we had
snow,
some snow, right? But it was cold before we got the real cold, before the snow came and insulated the ground. But I've lost a whole bed of fava beans before, but not the crimson clover. They're hardy, I think, to probably 10 degrees.
Yeah.
Or so,
yeah.
Which we don't get down that low here, or haven't for a long time. 12, I think it was. But.
You know, yeah, just an amazing difference. You know, we're 40 minutes south of Portland,
yeah.
And you know, we've been down, was it 2 or 3 years ago, we got down to 5 that year that it got minus 10 in Eugene?
Yes.
Man.
All right, but there's other cover crops too. The, you know, like we mentioned, the ryegrass, which is not a legume, but will provide lots and lots of organic matter in the form of roots. It can really grow down a lot, and that's generally mowed in the spring.
You can also do a combination of like vetch and rye, and the vetch will climb up on the rye and makes it, you know.
Right. The caveat with vetch, or the concern, or the, just to make sure that you get that cut down before it goes to seeds, because I found vetch is much more weedy after it goes to seed.
Well, then you want to do that anyway, because you want to get it, that nice green stuff into the soil before.
Right. And, you know, farmers with their big, your big machines out there, you know, it's easy to, pretty easy to chop it and get it into the soil. But for home gardeners, that's much tougher. And what I recommend, which we'll talk about in the spring, is just cutting it off, leaving the roots in the ground to rot. And that's where the nitrogen is, along those roots, and then plant around the that or through.
Cool.
So cover crops, use them. They're cheap. They should be in the stores now. They probably run from $2 to $3 a pound or something like that. But a pound will cover a lot.
Yep. Yep. It's a good idea.
Okay. Back to our cool theme. Lucky Peterson, title track from his album Beyond Cool, and then we'll come back with the Garden Stumper. Okay. That's kind of beyond cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah, Lucky Peterson. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll take this phone call from Sam, and then we'll come back with the Garden Stumper. Okay, good morning, Sam. You're with the Dirtbag.
Good morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So the lady that wanted to plant something for her chickens?
Yeah.
Yellow Blossom Sweet Clover.
Yeah.
We used it for seeding after fires, and it'll grow in a parking lot.
Well, that's kind of the problem. That, yeah. I don't see too much of that around here, but I wish I did because it's a great bee plant.
It is.
A honeybee plant.
It's a good plant. It's a good livestock forage, and the chickens would love it.
Yeah, they would eat any seed that, right. You know, let it blossom so the bees can get in there, and then let the chickens go.
So the other thing everyone was praying for a west wind so that the smoke would clear out.
Yeah.
And so the fire took a run last night and burned out the head of Hermit Creek. So be careful what you pray for.
Bummer.
Yeah. Okay, that was it.
All right, thank you. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That fire is depressing. I don't want to start to think about it.
Okay.
But so anyway.
Well, let's talk about gardening here then.
Yes.
No, let's talk about the Garden Stumper. You okay. Got our Garden Stumper theme? Okay, here we go. Okay, this is from Jim.
Okay.
And we have hints if we need to.
Right. So many listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with the Native American fruit that we call the pawpaw.
Native to the Midwest.
Native Midwest, East Coast, yeah. Not native here to Oregon. But anyway, that's consumed by Native Americans. And then, according to history, the Lewis and Clark expedition and all sorts of people eat pawpaws.
They were mentioned in the journals?
That's what I understand. I've not read the journals, so I've only...
Well, I haven't either, but I've read parts of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, in England, Great Britain, and the former British colonies, Australia and New Zealand, they use the name pawpaw to describe a different fruit. And that fruit actually doesn't really even grow in the United States. And I'm wondering, my, the garden stumper is, what fruit does that name describe?
Okay. That's a good one. If you know the answer, 503-231-8187. Okay. What is it referred to in those other countries? Well, do you want to talk about what to plant now?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, you can plant cover crops now. In the vegetables, you can plant lettuce. Probably even if you could get starts from the cucurbits, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, you could probably plant those now. But what about fruits?
Well, you know, we're on the, I would say, kind of on the cusp of fruit planting. Fall, I mean, you can plant anytime if you want to. And the summertime planting is challenging because you've got to really watch for the watering. It's really a problem. And if you plant a potted plant when it's dry, it's not only important to water the soil around the plant, but also to water where the original plant, the soil that it was growing in, because the roots aren't established and it could dry out real quickly. With the coming of fall and rain, then the window opens and we can start planting just about anything that's available. I mean, if you've got, you might want to avoid doing certain tender plants that may want to go through a season before they're exposed to really cold temperatures. Thinking things like kiwis and stuff might be, especially the fuzzy kiwi, might want to wait till spring.
So those are considered tender?
Young ones are.
Okay.
Once they've gotten a year on them, they've got a lot more hardiness than they do as a young plant. But just basically, I would say if we know it's going to start raining. The soil will be moist. The plants are going to be cooler. They're not going to be actively growing. It's a good time.
So right now, any fruit plant that we'd get is probably going to be potted.
Yes.
It's too early for bare root.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And just the main thing is loosen up, if it's a potted plant, loosen up the roots so it gets a chance those roots aren't just circling around inside the pot. I mean, you don't just dig a hole, remove plant from pot, insert in soil.
Yeah.
You got to loosen them up a little bit to make them, get them a good start. But this is a good time to start planting. Think about that.
Here's a personal question. A friend whose backyard I inhabit with four colonies of bees potted a pawpaw last year, a seedling.
From his yard.
From his yard, yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And it survived the winter, and it's growing a little bit bigger now, but it's still in a pot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think I had to do with that? Leave it in the pot still or put it in the ground?
Well, I think you should put it in the ground, but if you want it in the ground, then I would do it. I would probably wait a little bit till
a month or something like that.
Yeah, even a couple of weeks till we get into really definitely cool weather.
Right. Okay, but, and then my task is to figure out where to put it then.
Yeah. Yeah, and pawpaws, it's good that it's in a pot because they're somewhat difficult to transplant bare root.
Oh, okay. Right. All right. Well, speaking of pawpaws, we might have an answer or a question here. It's a question from Olga. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have watermelons, and two of them very huge, but still green tail kind of attached to a plant. And several of them have already brown kind of tails. So what should I do? I have to pick up them now before Saturday, before rain?
No, I don't think so. It's not going to be a cold rain.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we can contrast it with the winter squash, where you generally want to harvest those before we get into the cold fall rains. But I think it's a little soon to now. Although you're probably going to harvest them and eat them just about immediately.
You want to eat them when it's warm, of course, too. So,
because you're not planning on storing these or anything like that. I don't really know if you can store a watermelon.
It's not real good.
No.
I tried doing it. It didn't turn out well.
Yeah. So I would say, Olga, no, don't worry about it with these rains.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay.
And Olga, dobre utro.
Dobre utro.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, very good.
Thank you so much for your answer.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to the fruit and other things that we could plant now. What if it's in the store, you could plant it now.
Yeah.
But it might be better to leave it in the pot until, you know, we get more serious rains.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
the ground is moist. Boy, I had to dig a hole to replace the, it was actually my laundry pole that was holding up my laundry line. Yes, I still dry clothes outside.
Good for you. We do too.
And so I had to dig a new hole. And I went down as far as I could until I hit rocks where I couldn't go any further. And it was dry the whole way down.
Yeah.
Almost, you know, 20 inches, close to 2 feet, I think. And yeah. It was just powdery dry.
Yeah.
Of course, I wasn't watering there, but
right.
That just shows you what, if you're not.
Yeah, we have this very unusual climate, you know, that we have all that rain in the winter, and then it gets dry. And we have good friends in Korea we talk to a lot, and it rains in the summer there, you know, a lot. And so that they just have rain, dry. But here, it just stops.
And yep. And it stopped a lot this year.
Yeah.
I mean, in what we've gone 70 plus days with only one day of rain.
And that wasn't even anything to say. Couldn't even count it. I mean,
it was a little more wet where I was at the festival
down
in
really?
Jackson City.
Interesting.
But it was Sunday morning and then a little bit in mid morning.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't seem to bother the folks. It felt good.
So maybe we should do a hint for this garden stuff.
That would be a good idea.
Because we're not getting any calls.
Right. We're looking for from what is the fruit that these people in England and former
English colonies,
the Australia, New Zealand, what do they call papa?
Right.
And or what do we call it?
Okay. So how about a clue? It's a tropical fruit.
Okay.
You can't grow it here in Oregon very easily.
All right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could hardly even, if maybe in a really super warm greenhouse, you might have success with it.
Now, I don't want to have you give anything away here, but what do they call papa?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay.
Honestly don't remember. Maybe Asimina, that's what, you know, from the Latin name. But I think when I've used the name, they've been confused. You know, so I don't know they have a name for our Native American fruit.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to go to New Zealand again. I'll ask my
right.
folks there.
Right. Okay, well, we do have a phone call coming in, but we'll let him take care of that. And meanwhile, we'll get on with harvesting and storing.
Okay.
We can go back and forth here, but first of all, I'll talk about, I've mentioned squash. Let's start with that, and that the main, for winter squash, and we're not talking summer squash or zucchini right now, they don't store at all. I mean, they'll store in the refrigerator for several weeks, I think, but we're talking about winter squash.
Winter squash,
we'll do that after we get to the phone call. Okay, Justin, you have a question or an answer?
I got an answer. It's a wild guess, but
all right.
I'll try it. Cherimoya.
Well, cherimoya is related to pawpaw, and
that's a really good guess.
Unfortunately, that's not the fruit we're looking for.
All right, cool. Appreciate it. Thanks,
well,
guys.
You know, the thing to keep in mind, Justin, is that you didn't miss out on the prize because there isn't one.
But
I'm growing pawpaws for the first time, so it's on my mind. That's why I got really excited about it.
good. Well, I bet if you did a Google search, we might be able to find that answer.
Okay, well, we'll give another hint then. Okay.
Okay.
Jim, are you ready? The fruit that the name whose name we're looking for is, it sounds similar.
Mm, okay. Yep.
Okay. That's the hint. Okay, so back to winter squash. The best way to store those is to, well, first harvest before the real heavy rains set in. You know, I think we could wait until October for that, unless the plant is kind of dead already.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and then in that case, it's not going to, there's no benefit for leaving it out there. So harvest it, leaving in as much of the stem on as you can, you know, 2 inches at least. It just helps it so it doesn't rot from the stem, which is a very common place for the rot to set in. Store it in a warm place for 7 to 10 days, 70 to 80 degrees even. So wherever that might be, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a greenhouse, that'd be good. Keep it, but keep it out of the sun.
You probably bring it in your house, right?
Yeah. Our house certainly gets up to that temperature when when it's 90 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And then, as Jim mentioned earlier, put it into a cool place. Above freezing, you know, around 40 would be great. 40 to 50 would be fine. An unused bedroom under the bed or whatever. Keep it off the floor, though. You know, put them in boxes.
Under the mattress, probably not such a good spot.
True.
For guests. True.
And check on them periodically so you can spot any rot that as it starts.
Yeah. It does occasionally happen, but it's amazing right. how long you can store them.
Okay. We've got one... Another caller. Tim.
Hi. Hey, it doesn't rhyme with pawpaw, so I'm probably wrong, but what? I was thinking persimmon.
Yeah, unfortunately, Tim, you got the first letter correct, but we're still looking for the name.
Right, and it doesn't rhyme with pawpaw, but it's similar. Sorry if I miss.
Yeah, you stumped me, man.
Well, it is the garden stumper.
You're right. And persimmon is not a tropical fruit, so typically. At
yes,
least,
that's true.
So,
yeah, but, true. Oh, well.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Okay. So we'll keep on the phone
So
here.
Just in case somebody missed that little thing I said, that the first letter was correct.
Yes.
So that might lead to another answer.
Another guess here. Okay. Guess, yeah. Isabel, you got a guess?
Yes, but I don't have the one starting with C, and it's probably wrong. So
no, it's not.
We'll forget that one. And I did have a question, what to do with bean mosaic plants virus that's attacked one set of scarlet runners that I have. Do I compost it? Do I put it in the city compost?
Well, do you have
a
hot compost pile going?
No.
That was pretty emphatic.
It was.
Yeah, very few of us do. Well, you don't need the sun for that, but you need other particle size is the main thing. But so if you did have a hot compost, that would take care of any pathogen.
Even viruses, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, because if it gets up to 150 degrees, it will pretty much take care of that.
Yeah, it takes 4 or 5 years to decompose around here.
Right. Well, one idea is to just bury it.
Uh-huh.
Another idea is that if you keep track of your compost and compost vegetable stuff in one compost pile, then you could use that on your fruits or ornamentals or something.
Uh-huh.
So you're not re-spreading those spores.
Right.
Back to your beans.
Uh-huh.
But I'd also say that it might be, well, not so much with mosaic virus, but weather dependent. That is to say, if we have the right conditions, then it will grow. If we don't, then it won't, even if it's present.
Huh. That's interesting, because there is one bean plant that's in the same row as them, and it's not infected.
Well, put some pink ribbon around those beans and don't harvest them and save that seed and then plant those seeds.
That's true. Yeah.
see if you have something there, and then you could be rich. You wouldn't need to pester, bother calling us.
Right. I've never had this problem before. They've been so healthy, and then this time they just... I think it's bean mosaic virus. That's just what it could come up with.
Okay, we don't know for sure if that's what it is. Well, it just it's the weather too. You know, it's just different this year.
Yeah, but I have two other rows of them that aren't infected.
Okay, so have you planted in? Is this a new spot?
No, actually, it was one last year. The only thing it could be, I saved seeds from last year and planted them.
Well, it's just now coming on. Is that correct, or did you get some?
No, it's the bean mosaic virus. You mean coming on?
Yes.
No, it's pretty much into it now. I should have pulled them away before they got to this point.
Okay. Did you get any harvest?
I did initially, but okay. I stopped harvesting them from there.
Yeah. Well, that's a possibility.
They're starting to get really dry looking.
Okay. Yeah, if it's that prevalent, then I'd say send it to the curbside.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the safest thing to do.
And don't get that compost from them.
Well, no, they hopefully they do it right.
Okay, yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, good. All right. I have a couple of feijoas that got really hard hit last year.
I'm sorry, what was it?
Feijoas,
pineapple guavas.
Okay.
And they got really hard hit. So they're coming back, but I didn't get any on them this year.
They got hard hit by the winter cold?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of them actually split right down the middle, or split a branch off at the middle, which is not helping.
But all right.
It might come back.
So, you know, your accent sounds like you're originally from an English, from a country.
And I should know the answer to this.
But it doesn't start with C.
No, I was going to say papaya, but.
Yeah, well, say it.
Papaya?
That's
Yay! Good job.
Oh, I thought you said it started with C, like the last answer.
Well, the last answer was persimmon.
Persimmon?
It starts with P.
Yes.
So you got it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't catch that answer, I guess.
Yes. Cherimoya was the one before that, right?
Oh,
yeah. Cherimoya, I heard. Yeah,
yeah,
I didn't hear the other one.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yes. I thought you probably would know the answer.
Well, well done, Jim.
We want to get an answer before the end of the show.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always called them papaya, but it's like.
Well, are you from
here, papaya, right?
Yeah, but what country are you? Are you
New Zealand.
So. What do you call pawpaw then? I mean, yeah, what do you call our pawpaws?
Oh, well, wait a minute.
I mean, you call, excuse
pawpaw
me, what do you call our
the name
papayas?
That we call papaya.
Yeah, so what do you call our papayas?
No, no.
Papayas?
No, no, no. I think it's, so what they call, hold it.
What we know as pawpaws, they call papaya.
Right.
Well, what we know as papaya, what do you call that?
I thought that was...
No, pawpaw. No, opposite, Glenn. What they call the papaya is called pawpaw.
Yeah, but what we know as papaya.
So they call papaya pawpaw.
Right, but what we know as papaya, what do they call that?
Is that something different?
No, that's it. So what we know as papaya, they call pawpaw. What we want to know is what they call our Native American.
What we
fruit.
Know as pawpaw, right? What do you call that?
I don't know what the Native American one is.
Yeah. Do you even know what our pawpaw
I think
is?
We're right? Yeah, the wrong tree here.
Yeah, right.
We'll have to explore that further. But
okay, all right.
I will look this up.
Yeah,
good.
And thanks for being from New Zealand too, because I was there once already. And I'm going back. I hope, because very nice country.
Me too. I'm going back in a couple of months.
And feijoas.
A couple of months, another summer.
And as you know, feijoas are a big crop there, and that's one of the reasons I go. So
easy to grow down there too, by the look of them. Not so easy up here.
Actually, I've been growing them for a long time and had really, really good luck with them. I'm really happy with the plant.
Okay. Okay, so, good. Yeah. Do you make them into trees, or you got them as bushes?
They're bushes at my place, but I've seen them grown as trees too.
My brother has one that's probably 20 feet tall.
Listeners, this is the pineapple guava that they're talking about
right
here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're running out of time.
Yeah. Here's, hey, thanks.
You bet.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, Jim, give us a quick definition of self-fertile.
Okay, self-fertile, a question that come up many, many times in my working with plants, where somebody would say, is that apple tree self-fertile? Or if a plant was self-fertile, can I plant more varieties, the same, more of them, it's the opposite. So if a plant needs cross-pollination, can I just plant more varieties? No, you have to have different varieties for pollination if they're not self-fertile. If they are self-fertile, that typically means that they have either a perfect flower and the pollen is compatible. And some fruiting plants, some peaches, for example, are self-fertile and some aren't. So some you could plant one tree and get fruit. The others you need a second tree of a different variety to pollinate it. The word is sometimes you have to be careful with it because there's a kiwi type that's called self-fertile, but it's parthenocarpic. It doesn't really get fertilized. It isn't being pollinated by anything. It just forms fruit without being pollinated.
Which is ostensibly means the same thing, but biologically it's completely different.
Different process, right.
Yeah, we need another.
Yeah.
Unifertile.
Yeah, right, something like that. But of course we seem to always want self-fertility, but I think that too often it's a phrase that's used too liberally, and really you'll get better crops and most fruits if you have another variety nearby and don't depend on that.
Okay, that's it for this month. We should talk about self-fertility next year.
Sure.
This is Glenn Andreessen, Jim Gilbert here beside me. Derek, thank you. And we will go out with one more cool song, Johnny Cool, Steve Gibbons Band.
Bought a big house, sold a good soul.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Jazz Presents Tia Fuller Quartet, September 15th at the Fremont Theater in Portland. Tia Fuller is an award-winning bandleader. Her uncanny ability to spellbind audiences has also led her to many prestigious gigs, including a highly coveted position as lead saxophonist and featuring soloist for pop star Beyoncé's all-female touring band. Again, that's PDX Jazz Presents Tia Fuller Quartet, September 15th at 9:30 p.m. at the Fremont Theater, 2393 Northeast Fremont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.